CliffCentral.com.
So, Michael Flax, apparently you're upset because you feel like we're not playing Lil Wayne in Thug Week.
That's you're right. Calling this Thug Week,
yeah.
But we're the thugs. We haven't had Lil Wayne. Where's Drake? I mean, Eminem, for God's sakes.
Ben is full of answers for
50
you.
50 Cent.
Yeah, all right. Go on, Ben. Go on. I know you've got things to say,
Ben. I'll sit this one out, guys.
All right.
There should be criteria for Thug Week.
Mabale, do you want to say anything?
So, Tupac was not a...
No, Tupac's a thug. He's gone to jail. He's been shot. He's
dead.
A gangster.
Ice Cube, not a thug.
Dr. Dre?
Dr. Dre's a thug. You actually want to hesitate,
Michael. And Queen Latifah in her time, I mean, you got to remember, now she's some softcore actress. Like, Ice Cube is a softcore actor. But they used to be big deals.
These people paved the way for your Little Wayne and your Little Drake.
And I did say it's Thug Week. I did say it's Thug Week, not Scissorp Week.
Lil Wayne paved the way for them. Do you know I was telling Mark earlier?
They came before Little Wayne, so there's no way Little
Tupac
Wayne...
Tupac didn't know Little Wayne existed.
Do you know the word bling bling? Lil Wayne came up with that.
Oh, that's great.
He came up with that.
Yeah. That's fantastic.
50 Cent what shot 9 times, once in the mouth. Still rapping.
No, I like... Look, Fitty, fine. You win on that front. You do not win with Lil Wayne.
Michael, and how did someone born later than someone else put that other person on the map if...
Ben, your brain... Your brain
Lil Wayne was named the greatest rapper alive,
by
and
you.
We're not playing
by
him.
By who?
By the world.
Wait, who's the world?
The world at large.
Do you remember watching Straight Out of Compton and how N.W.A. completely changed the course
and
birthed hip hop essentially?
I even bought you a shirt, the N.W.A. shirt.
These guys are revolutionaries.
Love them.
Well, then there you go. That's what we're playing right
but
now.
But we can incorporate Lil Wayne.
No, we don't have to.
We don't really have to.
He's not in the same league as these guys.
Why must we take a chihuahua to a big dog show?
Coming straight from the underground. That's cool rap. Nigga got it bad cause I'm brown. And not the other color, so police think. And wait till I pull out the DMX, motherfucker. You wait and see. I'll teach you some things about thug. Big dogs. And I haven't even begun with Notorious B.I.G. It's only Wednesday.
I should be allowed to pick on Friday. That's all I'm saying.
No.
All right, you know what? You can choose one of the songs for Friday. Let's compare it to all the others.
Just one.
Okay. And Mubs, you get to choose two.
Okay.
Is someone trying to call us on Skype? I just heard a noise.
Yeah, no. It was
someone just sent us a friend request on Skype.
Oh.
Gonna accept.
Who is it?
It was Biggie
Dean
from
Kabasa.
The grave.
Okay, well, maybe Dean supports you on the Lil Wayne front. Okay, everybody, it's a Wednesday morning, 27 of July. Jesus, it feels like this year is running away. You know that when the 1st of August hits, we got 4 months left of the year. You thought about that?
No, I haven't. Not until you put it like that.
Well, 5 months. I mean, at the end of August, it's 4 months. But
seriously,
my maths
you
is horrendous.
You're an eloquent version of Jay-Z. The two of you are numbers.
December. I think I'm very good at counting. Come on. I mean, give me a chance.
800 and 700. Listen properly.
I am.
700.
Yes.
And 69,820.
Fellen.
And Savent.
Savent.
Right.
You can't forget
I had the same maths teacher as Gedley Sliggies. Give me a chance. Speaking of teachers, I do want to talk to Sekgo Moeng. Now, you know that we care about kids and education in this country, and this is not going to be one of those discussions where we sit and we go, oh, you know, it's such a problem. Education is such a problem in this country. There's so many kids who just can't read. There are a lot of kids who can't read. We know our literacy rates are horrendous. But there's someone doing something about this. And what I love is bringing the people in here to talk to all of us who know how to fix the problems. Not just sit here and talk about them. Fix them. And Sekgo Moeng has a business called Spotlight Education. She focuses on kids and literacy. And we tracked her down, and this might be the best news for people who are concerned about how many kids in this country can't read properly. I mean, I struggle in a, on a good day.
Well.
Right?
You just gave us an example of how bad your mathematics is. So
right.
Let's focus on literacy then.
So let's focus on literacy because, Sekgo, it's a pleasure to meet you. How nice of you to come in and see us this morning. Sekgo Moeng is our guest. It's called Spotlight Education. Am I right about that so far? Let me just switch on your microphone here. You've got such microphone problems today. You have no idea. Testing, testing. Hello, Sekgo.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm good, and you?
Good. It's nice to meet you.
Thanks for having
me. So tell me about what Spotlight Education is.
Spotlight Education is a company that was formed to change lives through education. So we offer extramural activities that are fun and entertaining, but that teach kids how to read English in a short space of time.
How short is that space of time?
We've tested our products on kids, and it literally took them 20 days to learn how to read 3 to 4 and 5 letter words in English, just from playing the games with the teachers.
Unbelievable. How did you stumble upon this? I mean, you must be some kind of a genius yourself, because we know how difficult it is with limited resources, with schools that aren't always as functional as they might be, particularly in rural areas. We know what the communication gap can do to someone's expectations for their own career, for their own advancement in life. Clearly, being able to read and being able to read quickly and fluently and being able to grasp those things at a young age is so instrumental in how someone's life will turn out.
Definitely. The programs that we use use phonics as a method of teaching. So phonics as a method of teaching kids how to read by correlating sounds and symbols in the alphabetic writing system. And that's what makes it easy for children to grasp concepts. But I think the other thing that really helps with our program is, you know, kids are inclined to study because they have fun. So it's easy for you to get their undivided attention, and they learn in the process without even realizing it.
You mentioned that it was fun and that there are games, and that's kind of how you get the kids involved. What kind of games do you play with them?
We basically use adventure phonics games.
Yeah.
So they consist of exercises and cut games.
Oh, okay.
That kids play with the teachers.
That sounds pretty cool. Now, phonics, yeah. That's like apple.
Yes.
B.
K for cat and stuff.
Okay.
Like yes.
Well, Ben's still struggling with some of that. You know, he didn't really go to school. He had to teach himself in the wild.
Yeah.
Ah, well, when we go in the wild one day, you'll look to me when things get howly.
Yeah.
But, I mean, this must be a very gratifying thing to do because you see immediate improvement in people's comprehension.
Definitely. It's amazing. I think, you know, seeing them just progressing in such a short space of time is fulfilling.
Do you have products like DVDs and things that you can sell if people are interested in doing this in their own areas, or is it a program that you need to actually get?
It's a program that you need to get from us. You know, we have trained teachers, so you parents are welcome to send their kids.
Are you all over the country?
Not at this stage. We'd like to get there, though. I mean, we only have a center in Midrand at the moment, and uh-huh. We are opening a new one in Parkhurst as well. So if parents are interested, I think they can just go to our website, www.spotlite.co.za. So it's spelled differently. I think people always get it wrong.
Spotlite.
So it's not Spotlight the way you know it, you know.
Sure.
So, I mean, then, you know, we can then provide more information regarding where, you know, they can get our programs, basically.
How do you determine the level of a kid's literacy or comprehension in order to give them the right courses? I mean, do you just take all comers and they all sit down and they all learn together, or are you able to evaluate?
No, our teachers do pre-assessment. So before we take in your child, you know, we have a session where teachers sit with them and then they take them through some questions, and that's when they can determine where the kids are in terms of literacy levels.
Michael Flax, I don't know what your levels of literacy are. But your spelling is not great.
My spelling's not great.
Yeah.
But I think that has to do with the way I hear things and sound things out.
Right, which is phonics. If you'd done Spotlight Education when you were a kid, you might have been a whole lot better at spelling.
Probably. Yeah. And spelling's a big thing. Like in varsity, you get counted down marks for spelling and stuff like that.
Well, when I get emails from people that can't spell, I just delete them.
I know, you don't take them seriously.
No, you can't. Ben?
Some of my people don't read Michael's emails.
I'm still wondering why Paul Mashatile hasn't confirmed that interview for Friday. But, Seho, is this your business? You started this all on your own?
Basically, Spotlight Education is my business, but the guys that developed and produced the games, my partners. You know, I've worked with them on quite a lot of projects before, so they decided to develop such wonderful programs, and I decided, okay, let's just use it, you know, and change lives.
It is incredible, and we need programs like this in South Africa.
Yeah.
So the website, again, in case people need to know.
It's Spotlite education.co.za.
Spotlighteducation.co.za. Spotlight spelled Spotlite. And if you need any more info, we'll post that up on cliffcentral.com later today. But listen, congratulations on your business. Congratulations on the things that you're doing to help kids read faster, read better. I wonder if the president had a chance to come and see you. Maybe, you know, just maybe those speeches wouldn't be so troublesome for him.
Thank you so much.
And I appreciate you coming to tell us about your amazing program this morning.
Thank you for having me.
Very cool.
I really appreciate it. Thanks.
Hey, we like people who are innovating, who are improving other people's lives.
Okay, thanks.
And we all know how important education is.
Yes, it is.
Very good. Well, thank you.
All right. Thank you,
Seho. Seho Moeng. And if you want to find out more, you heard it. Spotlighteducation.co.za on the web. Right, Mubs?
That's right.
Damn straight. Okay, one or two things I want to get to this morning before Rob van Vieren comes in. First of all, so David Attenborough, I don't know if he's talking about animals here or if he's talking about Pokemon Go.
Well, he did narrate Pokemon Go, didn't he, recently?
He did indeed, yes.
So it's understandable that it might be confusing to know what he's talking about now.
What do you think this is? You tell me.
Hunting animals need hunting grounds. And that inevitably brings them in conflict with humanity.
It is, of course, a bird, a red-tailed hawk. Until human beings devised weapons for themselves, this was the most powerful killer on Earth.
What do you think? Real animal or Pokemon Go?
I'm so thrown by the sound effect.
Yeah, because that's what's meant to confuse you.
I'm going to go with real animal.
I'm going to go with real animal as well because he's talking about before man took over.
So correct.
That was long before was Pokemon. Thing,
yeah. Correct. You've got that one right.
The top predator. Few creatures could escape it. Nothing could threaten it. But that has now changed.
A single hunter would be very unlikely to tackle a healthy adult. It simply wouldn't have the weight and sheer strength needed to bring one down.
First of all, the sound of that animal going like that.
No.
It's got to be a real animal, right?
Oh, a kimono dragon or something.
Oh, God, I hate those things so much.
And it might well get injured in the attempt. But for most of the time, they have a peaceful life.
Again, real animal because...
Yeah.
Do Pokemons get injured?
No, they can't, right? Around.
Of course they can. When you fight Pokemon in gym, do you not think they get injured and lose CP points?
By the way, what's your score today since we check
still
in?
Still not good.
CP points, sorry. This is thug lingo. I just haven't got onto
yet. What's CP points?
It's like the strength
terrible
points.
Palsy points. What is that?
I don't know. It's some point system they use, and you get like potions and shit like that.
Okay.
This is a lot more involved than I thought.
No improvement in your score.
Zero. I don't have the time to go like to shopping centers and go basically hunting for Pokemon.
Are you going to gym?
Gym? Yeah. Like normal gym.
Are you doing your exercise that we said you would
yes,
you
yes,
do?
100%.
Okay, how's
and,
it going?
Oh, I'm starting to fit into t-shirts I never used to wear.
Ah, so it's you're already well. Losing the weight.
I don't know if I'm losing weight or just tightening up and toning up.
Well, Liz is going to be pleased nonetheless, right?
Yeah, she's very strict with my diet.
Good.
If I eat anything out of place, I get like a lecture and a half.
Well, she knows you're a fat child deep down inside.
John, like I can feel that fat child still there. Sometimes I get cravings, but you just got to control him.
Good man. And if you can lose the weight in winter, Summer's going to be easy.
Well, I am losing it for summer.
Right. You're going to be Dac for Vac.
Dac for Vac.
See, I speak the lingo too, Mubs. It's not just him.
Yep.
Right. All right, enough of the stupid Pokemon Go stuff. Last night, believe it or not, I'm sitting at a table with Leanne Manis. She's sitting next to me. And she pulls out her phone, and she's got Pokemon Go on her phone. Leanne Manis, and she goes, "Look here, Gareth. Look at the Pokemon Go." I said to look. You can't be serious about this. She's like, "I like to stay in touch with what people are up to. I don't want my children one day talking to me, and I don't know what they're talking about." I said, "I'm sorry. Your voice went so deep there, I lost you for a moment." She said, "What?"
Look, it's taken over. Some people don't want to feel like they're being left out.
let me stand up for Leanne Manis. She doesn't sound like that. That's my poor attempt at sounding like her. But she doesn't actually play Pokemon Go. She just downloaded the app because she had to interview someone about it the other day.
Oh.
And she wanted to know what it was all about. But she did have a screenshot, and you can, if you go to her Twitter feed, you'll see this. There's a screenshot. She found a Pokemon in the studio at Morning Live the other day.
Didn't Flex find one here as well?
Yeah, it nearly ate Ben, but I caught it quick.
Yeah, thanks, Michael.
Ben, were you feeling worried? Concerned? Threatened?
I was, actually. I felt something strange, and Michael just was there to help me.
What kind was it?
It was a wild wombat.
Oh.
I mean, a wild zubat. What am I saying?
Oh, wow. How scary. Some terrifying stuff going on here. You gotta watch out. You never know when these things are gonna jump out of the...
Gotta catch them all.
The woodwork. Hey, is Rob from Furion on his way? I don't see him here.
No, he got stuck in traffic. He just messaged me now. He'll be here probably in about 5-7 minutes.
All right. Omar.
Okay.
Whose podcast, The Renegade Report, is live on cliffcentral.com this morning, says, "Little Wayne is a wet panty wannabe Muppet. Tupac would destroy him in a battle rap." Okay. Duncan Dean says, "Hey, Gareth, any chance you can give us a shout-out? My friend and I are two South Africans running the London Underground from station to station. There are 270 stations, 500 kilometers. We are 56% complete, trying to make a small difference by raising awareness for rhinos." Well, I've got a suggestion. If you take a rhino into the underground, then you seriously get people's attention.
Ooh, I mean, that could very quickly turn into an uncontrollable situation.
Sure. Now, of course, we support you, Dean, Duncan. Make sure that you go to facebook.com/runthelondonunderground if you want to know more. That's one word, Run the London Underground on Facebook, if you want to look that up. All right, a couple other messages that are coming through this morning. On Twitter, you can get hold of us by messaging straight to screen from WeChat, by tweeting to us at cliffcentral.com, or you can call us so you give Flax something to do. 0861-555-189.
Yes, I've renamed the phone Drake because there's hotline bling.
I don't know if you heard about Bernie Ecclestone. A family member of his has been kidnapped in Brazil.
Yeah, mother-in-law, so you know he's not going to pay rent.
It's his mother-in-law.
It's just so bizarre. These people kidnapped her. She's
what a stupid person to go for his daughter. You go for the mother-in-law. There's no way you're going to get cash out of him.
But a lot easier to kidnap the mother-in-law, though, isn't it? I mean, she's 67 years old.
Slow moving.
They've asked for ransom. It's weird because authorities, Brazilian officials, have no confirmation of this. The Ecclestone family are not prepared to talk about it. But apparently his mother-in-law has been kidnapped. I don't even know how much they're asking for, but this is bizarre.
Probably just tickets to the Brazilian Grand Prix, and Bernie won't even give that.
Bernie's apparently he's very tight, huh? Bernie Ecclestone does not like parting with his money.
Well, to become that super rich and powerful, you really got to be, and also there's like, you know, corruption charges against him all the time. So he can't just be throwing money away on a ransom.
No, you got to save that money up for when you're in criminal trouble.
Might be in court again soon.
Yeah. Anushka says, "I'm on my way to punch Flax." It's obviously over your little Wayne comments.
Yeah.
Okay. Iron Ninja Khan says, "Is Flax on drugs? If Tupac was alive, little Wayne would be working at Gap Store." That's actually from Greg and Iron Ninja Khan. Greg also says, "Well done. Let it never be said that we're not part of the shoe. West Side symbol in the air. Boom." Oh, okay. So he's a West Side rap fan. Thank you, Greg. Thug life. That's what he's saying.
Yeah, but you know what? Let's not be too harsh on Flex, because it is a generational thing, right? So he's been more exposed to Lil Wayne and Drake than what he was to Notorious B.I.G., to Tupac, Dr. Dre, Snoop Dogg. So it's,
yeah, but
it's
that's
just...
Also,
that's
also like saying, I don't understand currency because I never left the country, therefore the rand is the strongest. It's like, you kind of know what's what in life.
No, but I mean, you know, Lil Wayne and Drake sound so different to the original hip-hop guys that it's just... That's just Flex's preferred sound. To him, Lil Wayne sounds better than Notorious or Tupac ever did.
Ah, Mavs, but the question here is Thug Week. So we're questioning thugness. Okay. We're not questioning musical preference.
All right. Okay.
So what is the criteria?
You don't have a say. There's the criteria. Michael, it's just about legacy, you know, reputation, that kind of stuff.
You know what, Flex? If you don't like any of this, you can always turn Relax It's Flex on Friday into a bitch session where you put us in our place. All right, listen, there's something important going on. I've been at the heart of this for a long time. I don't like the idea that we call fat shaming or body shaming, that's what we call it. I feel like it's a serious motivator to tell fat people that they're fat so that they lose the weight. And it's worked. I have at least 5 written testimonials from people, including a woman called Fat Pat, who's now not so fat anymore.
Just Pat.
She's just Pat now. She used to be called Fat Pat, and...
Who? No, she didn't.
She wrote a book.
She did not used to be called Fat Pat. You called her Fat
okay.
Pat.
Well, I called her Fat Pat, but she wrote a book about her weight loss. She now is happy and healthy, and she can move around, and she can do interesting things, and her life has improved in leaps and bounds. She even mentioned me in the foreword of her book by saying I was so rude about fat people on my show that it changed her life, and she now is able to lead a normal life. She's eating healthy, all of that stuff. Here's a guy online. I don't agree with everything he says, but he's on the same side as me, and he's talking about fat acceptance.
All these people out there today that want to promote this positive body love image movement. Let me explain something to you real quick. When you want to dance around in your skin tight leotards with your fat rolls hanging out and saying you should love me for my personality, not my body, and you're promoting laziness and eating unhealthy and doing this, that, and the other and giving little care or concern to your body, let me tell you something. Let me accuse you of one thing here. You will not be there by the bedsides of the people that are currently dying from heart disease, which is the leading killer in the United States right now. You will not be the one paying the damn hospital bills. But you can stand there at their bedside and, you know, pet them as they're dying and say, well, you know what, at least people love you for your personality. Let me tell you something about self-respect. If you've got self-respect, you respect yourself enough to take care of the only body you've got. And suddenly, all of a sudden, everyone in this world has got a damn excuse why they can't be healthy. You sit there and say, what's your reason for being overweight? Oh, well, and then the excuses start coming out. When so many of you know damn good and well, deep down, you have no excuse.
It sounds like Jack Nicholson in A Few Good Men, right?
Why is he
you
so
have no excuse.
Out of breath.
You knew.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, look, he makes a good point, but he sounds really cross. I wonder why he's taking it so personally.
I kind of like his point about there's excuses for everything nowadays, and that's not a good thing.
Mm.
Look, obviously, making animal noises and like throwing things at people because of how they look also isn't a good thing. So someone needs to be met halfway on this one.
Oh, so that's cruel, is it?
Well, I mean,
is that what you're saying, Ben?
Yeah.
What are you possibly getting out of making another person feel terrible about themselves? Like, why are you even bothering commenting on somebody's weight to begin with?
Yeah, you see,
it's not like that person doesn't know that they have a weight problem. Trust me, they know. They wake up in that body every single day of their lives.
Yeah,
like, what are you getting out of saying?
Yeah, but there are people who are
you're
saying
you're fat.
Okay, I agree with you. It's just mean, right?
Yeah,
just mean. But there are also these people who say, "No, I'm very proud of how fat I am, and it's my body, and I'm happy." They lie. They're not happy.
They possibly do lie. It's very
so
it's
if they're allowed to lie, I'm allowed to be mean.
No, you're
not. Oh, come on, Mubs, give me a chance.
But again, you're right. Like always, you're the voice of reason here. But when someone is huffing and puffing next to me on a plane, yeah. and I've got this for 2 hours of my life,
yeah.
yeah,
they can take that fat and they can, well, I can tell you what, they can go somewhere with it.
Are these noises unacceptable, Ben?
Do you know where the problem yeah. comes in? Is obviously being overweight is unhealthy. Yeah. That is a given. It's bad for your heart. Yeah. It's bad on your joints. It's never a good thing. For me, the problem comes in when you see people, you know, become bullies over it. Do you know how many times somebody on Twitter will criticize somebody else, and then when you look at the picture of the person doing the criticizing, you think to yourself,
wow,
but
you
have no leg to stand on, my yeah. guy.
Well, you do, it's a big leg.
that's where it becomes
big
problematic.
Tree-trunk leg.
Is when people start bullying other people.
Well, that's why I'm very careful when I criticize how other people look. I only criticize people who really are much worse than me, like Prince William.
Coming from a former fat person.
Oh, here we go. Yes.
Like, sometimes you need someone to break you so you can build yourself back up in the shape that you want. Like, I was bullied at school for being fat, but I didn't become, like, lose the weight. I didn't lose the weight for the bullies. The bullies just helped me realize, oh, shit, I am fat, and these are the consequences of being fat, and therefore, I don't want to be fat. So then I lost the weight. So sometimes you need these bullies to, like, bring the light where, because some people might think it's all right to just keep eating, get fat, because they feel comfortable, it makes them happy. But truly, they can be happier when they're thin and know that they're going to live a healthy life. So sometimes you need people to break you a bit.
I ate my brother! I ate my brother!
What a great story. Thank you, Flex.
It's a pleasure.
It's beautiful. All right, we continue Thug Week on cliffcentral.com. Rob Van Vieren is our guest. He's the director of the Comics Choice Awards this year. We'll speak to him next. All of that and more coming right up. Are you ready for it? I hope so, because we're ready for you. Yeah, we're ready for you. Let me see what else I've got here on the...
Can you play one more of my suggestions?
Yes, let's hear a Ben's suggestion.
Ben gave me 2 ice cubes. Can we do 2 ice cubes in a day?
Damn right.
Yeah.
2 ice cubes with no DMX? No.
Oh, good point.
Everybody.
I love my niggas, but where's my bitches? I love my niggas, but where's my bitches? I love my niggas, but where's my bitches?
DMX giving fathers of daughters sleepless nights around the world.
But he went all Jesus on us. Not so long.
He found God.
Hey, Flex, where is Rob Van Vieren?
Rob was a couple minutes late for the interview, and then he went to go take a shit.
You're joking, is he?
No, we're going to phone him and start the interview from the bathroom.
He came running in here,
Rob,
and then he left again.
How was that? Nice toilet. Good flight. You can go straight in.
Let me ask him what he was
doing. Make yourself at home if you haven't already.
Thank you. Hello, Rob Van Vieren. Did you take a shit in our bathroom now?
I'm going at both ends this morning,
no!
to be honest. I'm really unwell. I may leave you guys with a little bit extra.
Are you okay?
I'm okay. I'm gonna get through it. Oh God, please don't do that.
I forgot we had the microphone in there.
We were recording you the whole time. Do you want to hear what we heard?
Yes, please.
Here it is. How are you, man?
I'm cool.
What a great introduction.
Yeah.
Isn't this the
Welcome
best?
To the show.
Okay, you are a serious man, an actor, a writer, director, producer, a guy of great accomplishment, and how do we welcome you to our show with shitting noises?
That's my style. I like it. That's definitely my shtick.
Listen, man, first of all, you're directing the Comics Choice Awards.
Yes, I am.
Wow.
I am, yeah. It's a great honor. I'm really quite chuffed that they brought me on board. It's such a massive event.
It really is. It's grown in leaps and bounds.
Yeah.
It's taken very seriously by comedians in South Africa. It ranks them. They get very pushy with each other.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's accolade and prestige attached to it.
Yeah, the great thing about it is, you know, it's your peers voting for you. So it is like a real sign of respect if you are nominated and if you happen to win. So
Nina Hasty is already sleeping her way to the top on that list. No, she really is. She told me the other day she's got a checklist and she's about three quarters of the way through it. So don't expect anything less than Nina Hasty walking away with all of the awards.
Well, she's still got to call me. Nina, I'm waiting for my call. Got to sleep with the director, surely. Yeah.
Now, let me just not defame her in her absence. She can tell you that story herself. she'll be back gladly, I'm sure. Yes. Now, listen, aside from all of this, I mean, we've spoken to you about all the things that you've been up to over the last couple of years, and really it's an incredible array of stuff from the serious. What did Napoleon say? From the sublime to the ridiculous.
Yeah, that pretty much sums up my career.
But it's cool because it means that you can never be uninspired, because if you're doing one thing that's very serious, which you have done, you know, you're acting and you're writing, you can do that almost dramatic stuff, and then you can go from that, in fact not almost, it's dramatic stuff, right through to totally wacky, most amazing show stuff, which I still love.
Yeah, it's, people often ask me, like, what's my favorite style of performance or what's my favorite medium to work in, and I really can't pick a favorite. I really love the fact that I get to do so many different things.
You're a renaissance man.
Thank you. Wow. Jeez. It's better than the shit noises I was hearing earlier.
There are not a lot of people who can deliver on a range of stuff like that.
Yeah, it's interesting. I kind of find it in many ways easier than if I were doing just one thing. I think on one level I'd just get bored if I was doing one kind of style of whatever. But like, for instance, I've just come from the National Arts Festival in Grahamstown about 2 weeks ago, and I was doing about five different shows there, and it was such a range. Like, I'd wake up every morning where I was doing a kids show with my wife. We wrote a kiddies book together, and it comes with a show that we do as well. It's got singing and dancing. It's about animals, and it's for like 4-year-olds, you know. And then I'm going into a stand-up comedy show, and then
sing a song that you sing to the kids. Come on.
I've actually got
come on, just one.
I've got the audio book. I'll leave a copy for you guys.
Just sing one for us now. I don't know why you're shy about
it. I'm so shy. I need auto-tune, dude.
I promise you I've embarrassed myself far more than you will embarrass yourself.
Florence, we're Watson, we're honey badgers too, singing songs and telling stories for you.
Not in a
caravan.
Oh, they live in
drive from town to town.
All right, now.
There you go. That's just a taste.
That is
But then back to the shitting noise.
How would I do on Idols? Come on, be honest.
No, not bad.
You should hear us sing. It's tragic.
Is it bad?
It's tragic.
You shouldn't. Listen to this.
But don't feel too bad.
Listen to Ben.
When your legs don't work like they used to before. And I can't sweep you off of your feet.
It's horrible, right?
Oh my god.
I was building into it though, Rob. You should really hear the fourth or fifth
singing?
Verse.
Well, listen to my belly.
Oh,
great. No. Mama's got humor. Oh god. She's a giggle at a funeral. Knows everybody's disapproval. I should have worshipped her sooner.
Have you heard enough?
I've heard enough. Yeah. Right. I feel so much better about my own singing.
Well, there you go.
Thank you.
At the Grahamstown Festival,
I was doing that, Florence and Watson and the Sugar Bush Mass. Then I would go into, I was directing two shows as well, one comedy show and then Mike van Graan's satirical comedy called Payback the Curry, which stars Daniel Richards, a very talented young actor. He's at the Soweto Theatre this week.
Uh-huh.
So please go check that out.
All right.
And then I would go into two stand-up comedy shows. I was doing my latest stand-up comedy show called Life, and then a best of show, and then I was also doing a one man kind of dramatic piece called Dangled, which is an adaptation of Nikolai Gogol's Diary of a Madman, which was adapted for me by Louis Fulhuyn, who's a very, very talented writer out of Cape Town, whose work is profane and perverse and
is this the kind of show people walk out of?
Yes, it's very hectic, very hectic, very, very intense. It's like Tarantino on tick, basically.
Wow.
So,
I thought Tarantino was on tick.
So, but that was for me. Like,
you know, Rob, I'm worried you're not doing enough. You did all of that every day for the duration of the festival.
Yeah, I did 30 shows in 11 days, 30 performances. But the point I'm getting to is that for me, it's actually in many ways easier because it's just a job. And when you're rehearsing a show, you will rehearse from 9 to 5, so you'll do the show. Five times in a day. So why not do 5 performances in a day? And if my take on it is that you get your mind in the show, you do it, you step out, and then. Whereas if you're doing one show a day, I think actors tend to kind of get worked up about it, and you kind of linger in the character or the part, or you work up. So the whole day becomes about that 1 hour-long performance. Whereas if you're doing 5 a day, it's just you go on. It's about that hour on stage. Then when you're off stage, you're off stage, and it's easier to switch it on and off. I think that's my theory anyway. So I keep telling myself.
I'm always a little bit taken aback by the range of depth of the things that you do, but I'm more especially interested in where you get the energy. I mean, each of these takes it out of you. If you're doing a good job, it's hard work, and all these precious actors who do only one show a day. They say, oh, I'm exhausted after this. But you're off to do your fourth
bullshit.
And fifth
it's
one.
It's bullshit. It's all lies, man.
Is it?
I think so. If you're rehearsing a production, you rehearse the entire day. And then it's part of your job and it's expected. Then when you're performing, you feel like you've only got enough energy for 1 hour in the day? Rubbish.
Yeah, but I don't know how...
Look, by the end of those 11 days of the festival, I was... stuffed. I was just finished.
Like, what kind of a life do you have? And is the thrill of it being on the stage? Like, where do you get payback?
Look, being on stage certainly energizes me. I do love that. Otherwise, I wouldn't do it. And it gives me way more than I feel like I'm putting out at the end of the day. Well, it's like give and take, you know?
Yeah, but you're putting out a lot. So are you getting back enough? I mean, is it balancing the equation?
I have a 5-year-old, and she balances the equation because she demands my attention, and I want to be present as a father. So,
but you're not. You're on 5 shows a day.
You're not always.
Does she call you Rob, or does she think you work in the house?
She goes, Rob Van Buren. I can walk in, she goes, ladies and gentlemen, Rob Van Buren.
Have you seen anything in your daughter that makes you think she may also be very talented?
Definitely. She's a performer.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's weird though. She goes into these really shy moments every now and again. Like I've seen her do a play at school, like the planet. So everyone's got like she was Mercury, I think.
Yeah.
And then like she can't talk. She just stood there, total stage fright, couldn't say a thing. Man. But generally, she like walks into a room and just owns the room. You know, she's certainly we've got a very similar sense of humor, I think.
What kind of a childhood did you have for you to develop this ability to perform? You have to have a confidence instilled at you at a young age. Most people get on a stage and they do what your daughter did. They freeze up.
Yeah, I don't know. I think, you know, my mother always encouraged me in terms of performance in the arts. Like, she took me to the festival when I was still in high school, but she also encouraged me to see theatre and...
Well, was she like some kind of hippie or?
Not really. She was an artist, I guess. Officially, but I think she always wanted to be an artist.
Okay.
And I was very lucky in the sense that both my parents instilled in me the sense of do what you love. Don't ever accept anything less. And if you love this, then go for it.
That's an amazing thing to grow up with. Most parents would love their children to just earn money.
Yeah.
So that they don't have to sponge off of them forever.
Yeah.
If your kid comes home and says they're an artist, a part of you dies because you think,
cuck yourself. Oh, yeah, you're like, oh, no.
Oh no, that room above the garage
forever. Exactly.
Forever.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
And they're just never going to provide.
But
for
I think
themselves.
The trick is if as a parent you really like really instill that sense of like go chase your dream, but understand that you've got to work your arse off for it. And I think if you have that understanding, then you will make a success out of yourself. You know, if you've got the passion, but you match that passion with a dedication and, you know, like a professionalism, just do the work. Do the work. Don't ever, you know, settle for anything less than your best every single time. Then you're going to make a success out of yourself eventually. I don't know.
Do you ever feel pressure to be funny when you're not performing? Like people will bump into you. Now, there's so many.
Yes, people certainly pressurize me, but I'm like,
hey,
no.
Come on, tell us a joke. Tell us a funny like, story.
No.
Are you? Because a lot of comedians, and you're not just a comedian, but a lot of people that are funny for money, when they're in real life, they're kind of depressed and miserable. I mean, the other day, I was talking to Dave Levinson about this, and he's a misery.
He's a misery.
Sad sack of shit, that man. And he was telling me about how, you know, how tough, and I know that being a stand-up comic, for example, is a very tough business. You go up on that stage every single night, and people want to say shit things about you.
Yeah, it's brutal. It really is a brutal kind of form of performance stand-up.
It's almost a bit masochistic, right?
Yeah, in many respects. You've got to have a very, very strange kind of bloody-mindedness to be a stand-up comic, I think, because there is no way around sucking at some point. Like, if you want to be a stand-up, you're going to die. There is no way. And the only way that you get better as a stand-up comedian is by dying on stage, because you don't learn from the gigs where you kill, where you're, like, on fire. You learn from the gigs where you suck at it.
I sort of equated it once to, and I don't have the experience of it, but I tried to imagine what it would be like. It's almost like you really are an ugly, short, miserable guy, but you keep hitting on the hottest girl in the club.
Yeah, thank you.
You're fearless. No, but that's kind of what it's like. Not you, but comedians in general.
Yeah.
I mean, you're not...
Yeah, it really is. You need
You're not as goofy looking as Casper De Vries, you know? I mean, we love the guy. He's got a show here. But, you know, if you went in...
Are you going to go to his grilling tomorrow?
Is it tomorrow?
No, it's tonight, eh? It's tonight.
Is he doing that?
Yeah, it's because he's the winner of the Lifetime Achievement
Experience Award, or whatever it is, yeah?
The Comics Choice Award, so that it comes with the grilling of a lifetime, which happens tonight at Parker's.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's going
to
be
maybe
a
I should go to that. That'll be hysterical.
Yeah, it'll be great.
Now, he's a funny dude.
He's
right?
A funny man. Funny man. And perverse and strange. And it's right what you say. I think you do need a kind of madness to get into this industry and to succeed at it. You need something has to be wrong with you, but the lows are way, like the highs are way more than the lows, you know, what you get out of it when it works, that's why people keep going back, because it's like a drug, because the line between success and failure is so evident in stand-up comedy more than any other kind of performance, because the stakes are so high all the time. It's like if they're not laughing, you're sucking. You are failing, and if you're laughing, you're it's working. You know, like with a play, you've got an hour or so to kind of win them over with your narrative or with your character. Or with, you know, if you drop your concentration at one point, you can always kind of work them back into it.
Yeah.
With stand-up, it's like as soon as you lose the crowd, you're dead, and that fear that comes with that sure. Moment where you go, oh shit, it's
and you're alone.
You are so alone. That's
and
horrible.
The spotlight is on you, and these people are baying for your blood eventually.
That's horrible.
Where do you begin when you have to direct a show like the Comics Choice Awards? How do you start? Do you write down a list of things? Do you figure out who your team is going to be?
I'm very lucky in that the people at WACT, even though WACT isn't officially producing it, but it has been their baby from the start. They put together an amazing team, and they've put together an amazing team of writers who, before I even came on board, had started, you know, putting the sketch ideas together. They have a great kind of a creative team and technical team. So my job is really actually really easy. It's all kind of been laid on a platter for me, and I just then have to make sure it all ties together, make sure the sketches are as kind of tight and clean as possible. Not clean in the sense that there won't be any swearing. It'll be rough, definitely. Yeah. But just make it, you know, make it work. Make it smooth. Make it. I think award ceremonies tend to go on a bit. That's my big thing about this.
Even funny ones, if they're too long,
it's
right?
Just, and then by the end, you're like, I don't care. I don't care who this person is.
But there's also if you watch the Oscars now, which are just these. Such sterile things.
Yeah, and it's like a 3-day event.
Oh, And it's backslapping and chumminess, and it's just boring for those of us who are not in that chumminess.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, obviously, you're going to try and craft something completely different, and in South Africa, we're not yet at the point where we're trying to please everybody so much we please nobody. With these awards, the people who watch them, the people who participate in them, they've got to have fun.
Absolutely, and it's something that this year we're very conscious of. We don't want it to feel like an industry kind of in joke. Mm. You know, it's a show that's available and open to the public. So we're encouraging that, and tickets are going fast. So people must. I think it's Ticket
Pro. How can you
book?
Ticket Pro. Okay,
yeah.
Good.
And you know, we've got all the best acts in the country are there, and they're going to be on stage, and so it's. It's always a very entertaining evening, and this year is going to be even better. We really want to gear it to not just the comics that are there, but to the general public.
How long do you have to be working on this as a director before it actually happens? I mean, are you preparing months in advance?
The scripts have been happening for a couple of months now, and a lot of stuff behind the scenes, which the production company have been doing for the last couple of months, and they, as I say, have been fantastic and made my job a lot easier because I've been so busy with Graham's son and stuff.
Yeah.
I've managed now coming up doing this week.
Did you want to throw up a little bit there?
Just a little bit of a... You went, oh, yeah. I swallowed it back.
Turn towards Ben if that projectile thing happens.
This is a great day for bodily problems for Rob van Vuuren.
Oh, it's going to happen. I might run out at some point. So I got a week here. We're doing lots of rehearsals. We did a shoot yesterday for like a little sketch piece that we're doing during the show. Read-throughs after this, recordings, voiceovers, basically finalizing those sketches and the scripts and cast for it and doing cast read-throughs. And then
are you friends with other funny people in the business? I mean, are you friends with the other comics or...
You know, yes, I find the comic industry, the stand-up comic industry, so warm, so welcoming. And
like you have these people around to your house for dinner and that
Huh? And you know, like you mentioned Dave earlier. Dave and I and Kurt Skunrath went to Perth earlier this year to perform. And it was such a jaw, you know, like just the three of us hanging out, walking around Perth, making fun of Australians, and then getting to perform. And
that's great.
But it really, like, I think there's a misconception about about comics that they can be quite bitchy. And yes, they can. But having come from a theatre background, I find comics way warmer, way more welcoming.
Than the theatre people.
Yeah, less pretentious.
Yeah.
And it's. I think it's got something to do with the fact that the way that the industry is geared is that you need more. You always need more acts. You always want more people to come on board. Because we're all, so often comics are running like a gig where you have a lineup and you need to keep that lineup fresh. You can't keep playing the same acts over and over and over again. So by virtue of that, you really are encouraging people to become to come and be a part of it. So it's really truly inclusive, and it's also the most I think the most democratic kind of performance style out there, because you don't need any qualifications. It doesn't matter what your background is. It doesn't matter what you look like. It doesn't matter what color you are. It doesn't matter your cultural background. None of that stuff matters. The only thing that matters is, can you make them laugh?
Yeah.
And if you can make them laugh, you're part of the family. And it's really, like, it's really warm. I was just at Parker's last night, and I was on stage with Vittorio Leonardi, Sculptor Zaidnot, and Richelieu Benoit. And like, again, I was just, like, struck by, it really does feel like a family. And there's a genuine respect and love and admiration between all the comics in the scene. Like, it does get a bit bitchy every now and again, and people step on each other's toes, but by and large... It's very warm, very inclusive. It's a wonderful industry.
I've heard a couple of times people saying that comedians are some of the most depressed people in the world. The only problem is that the people saying this are not comics. So what do you say to that?
I think there's some truth in it, definitely.
Yeah. Isn't it just because you guys are smart? I mean, you have to be clever to be able to do a good routine. And you have to be able to capture what's relevant. And you have to be paying attention to the world, and that's bound to make you depressed.
Yeah, I think so. And you generally you are trying to make funny out of like the tragic in life and in society. Like the comedy that really works is where it's stuff that resonates with people, and the stuff that resonates with people is the stuff that really pisses you off or that makes you unhappy. And the comedian's trick is then to make us laugh at that, so that we can, you know, get as a society, as an audience, release, catharsis from that. But I think you, as a comic, if you're constantly dipping into that well and trying to find out how to subvert it, I think it can get a little bit depressing.
Have you ever done a performance? You said there was this play that you did the other night that is really dark and people might walk out of this thing because it's so challenging to watch. Do you ever do stuff that you feel bad about afterwards? Do you ever, you know, say something in a routine that you think afterwards, oh Jesus, that really makes in out of context, it makes me sound like a bad person.
I think specifically with stand-up comedy, because you're walking such a thin line all the time, and it can be very confrontational, and obviously you're taking the piss out of people a lot of the time. And
political correctness is exactly the opposite of humor.
Yeah.
You very seldom find someone who is politically correct and walks that line and has a sense of humor.
Yeah.
They're two very different creatures.
Yeah, as a comic, you kind of are geared to stepping over the line and seeing how far you can step over the line and how and why and all of those things. But I struggle with it a lot because I'm quite confrontational on stage, but as a human being in normal society, I'm not really. I'm quite amicable.
Have you ever had violence threatened to you?
I've threatened a lot of violence.
You have?
Yeah, and I have had people who've reacted very negatively to me, and it actually hurts. I don't want to hurt people. No. I don't really want to offend people, and it's been something that I'm slowly getting my head around. Of also actually just being okay with the fact that some people don't dig me, and sometimes
there's nothing you can do.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's you know, I think you've got a great attitude as far as that's concerned, and you always have. You've always been able to push people's buttons, and at the end of the day, go, fuck it, if you can't deal with it, it's not my problem. This is who I am. Like, take it or leave it.
Yeah, I don't know. Some days, does
it take its toll on you?
Sure, you know what that is. I mean, it's anything where you're in... I don't know how politicians do it, to be perfectly frank.
It blows my mind how they can be so thick-skinned.
Yeah, because there, you're actually getting involved in people's lives. Like, you don't have to listen to me, and you don't have to go to your shows. And your life can exist outside of our influence, and it might be very happy. You know, for all I know, we may make no contribution whatsoever to your existence. But if you're someone who's walking door-to-door promising you're going to deliver water and electricity, and then you fucking don't...
Yeah.
To me, that's hard. And then when you're confronted with it the next year, when you go to the door for the first time in 4 years, and you go, "Hey, Mrs. Dlamini," and she answers the door and she goes, "You son of a bitch, where's my water?" And they go, "Oh, well, it was the DA or it was the EFF
this
or
and that,
you
and
know, the, this person."
Just vote for us again, and the water will be
right.
The water will be back.
Like, to me, that I wouldn't be able to deal with that. I mean, if you disagree with me, that's absolutely cool. In fact, I've had more interesting discussions with people I disagree with than with people I agree with.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
What do you feel about the elections? It's a week away. I mean, do you care about that? Are you're not very political.
I'm not overtly political, and I try not to be. Certainly not in my comedy. I think consciously.
Will you vote Clinton or Trump, or were you a Sanders guy?
I was a Sanders guy. Come on.
Knew it.
Come on. And anybody but Trump. That man is a maniac.
Obviously the right way to go.
You would have voted for the 1% of the 1% of the top 10% of all the percents.
It's crazy what's happening over there. Yes, it's really, really crazy. It's so rad that it's not just us going, oh God, our politics is such a mess. Yeah. And suddenly it's like...
It's like people have suddenly realized that it doesn't matter who you vote for, they're going to be other people. And people are so full of it that no one's going to live up to your expectations, which is why, like, I think Barack Obama might be the last great president.
Mm.
He might be the last person we put on a pedestal. Obviously, there's some people who don't like him at all. But if I look at him and Michelle, I was talking about this yesterday. To my mind, Michelle's like the consummate First Lady.
Yeah.
She's smart. She's dignified. She's made a difference. She's done as little as possible to rock the boat. She's been a terrific mom.
She writes her own speeches.
She doesn't... She's got every ingredient you would ever need and more.
Yeah.
How can any first lady live up to this? I almost felt bad for her having to come out and support a Hillary. It almost feels like, you know, this is her duty and she's doing her duty.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
We're all thinking, God, if you could just run for president, you'd be better than her.
I think our elections are going to be super, super interesting. I think we're in a very interesting space politically in this country. In
the, why?
Just in the sense that that power base that the ANC has held for so long is finally actually being corroded. And look, we still need a proper opposition, but like the EFF has made some just taken the whole kind of political structure in the country and really kind of taken by the scruff of the neck and shaken it around. And I think it's
where do you live most of the time?
Cape Town.
You're in Cape Town.
I live in Fishhook, yeah. So,
is that DA?
In DA land.
Fishhook is full of a lot.
Moosey phoned me yesterday.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's been phoning my belly nonstop.
He phoned me, and I was like, hey, Moose, what's up? What's up, bro? And he didn't.
He just
carried on talking.
Robbie's so focused on the politics, though.
Oh, that's what I thought. I think he's obviously got a lot on his plate right now.
He's got a message to get through. He's got no time for chit chat.
He doesn't listen to you.
Coffee's so judgmental of him.
You know,
I felt cheap. I got to be honest. I felt used.
You live in Fishhook. Now, I know we're running out of time here. Fishhook's like, it's a bizarre little place.
It's crazy. And that's one of the
reasons
I really, really love
it. You've got a lot of angry old white people in Fishhook, right?
Yeah, a lot of Christians, but then a lot of angry conservative Christians. Yeah,
who have buns and things.
Yeah, yeah.
Like
a lot of
old ladies
a lot
buns.
Of old people. There's that's the place for the newlyweds and nearly deads.
Yes.
But it's really, it gets such a bad rep because it's next to Cork Bay, which is so kind of hip and bohemian, and then you come into Fishhook, it's got that ugly main road.
Yes.
But I live up on the mountain, and I have a sea view, I have a mountain view, and it's...
You ever seen anyone being eaten by a shark? Because you can see that from your house.
A friend of mine did, actually. They were on their computer doing some work, and like their window's right there, and he literally saw the dude being... Yeah, I think
did the shark completely eat him, or...?
Yeah. He said this shark just came straight out of the water with this guy in its mouth, went back into the water... Gone. Just
and
red.
He just
water.
Carried on typing on his computer.
He tweeted it and then he was like on the news in Hungary that night or something.
But I heard Fishhook would be truly overrun by old people if it wasn't for the sharks. The sharks the sharks do their bit in society.
They're culling them.
Because there's more old people than anyone else in that little area there. Jeez.
And weirdos. There's so many weirdos in Fishhook. My wife and I have nicknames for all of them. They're like, we spot them. We do like weirdo spotting in Fishhook.
Listen, you try to be here next time on time so we
can
actually
talk
to you.
Thank you. I'm sorry.
There's a lot I still want to talk to you about.
I've got to go back to the toilet now.
Yeah. Sort that out, please. The Comics Choice Awards, when is it?
3rd of September.
Got to get your tickets
Teatro
now.
At Monte Cassino. Get your tickets now. They're selling out fast.
Good.
And Payback the Curry, go check that out. That's the show I directed.
Excellent.
It's at Soweto Theatre. And, yeah, check out for all my other stuff.
Very good. Thank you, Rob.
Thank you, Gareth.
Rob van Vieren, I said it earlier, Renaissance man of
woohoo!
South African
performing arts. I'm
putting
that on my CV. I'm writing that in my bio now.
Go for it. It's absolutely true. You actor, writer, director, dancer, producer. Yes, sis. Give someone else a chance. All right. Thank you, Rob. Thank you very much, Mubs. Thank you, Ben. Thank you, Pashida. Thank you, Flax. Thank you most especially to you. We will see you tomorrow between 6 and 9. Next, it is Frankly Speaking. Rory Sang and Andrew Levy will be telling white people to sit down for the next hour. In fact, Andrew is wearing his revolutionary glasses today. He looks like he's leading like a Cuban protest or something. That's coming up next. You know what's going to happen next. In the next hour, you don't want to miss. Frankly Speaking, there's plenty of other good stuff through the course of your Wednesday today. I am sure you can find out everything you need to know by going to cliffcentral.com. Oh, wait, we got to do the unnews before I get out of here. Let's just finish off with that. Here's the stuff you need to know. Meteorologists around South Africa are trying to work out how great... giant, massive tornado ripped through Tembisa yesterday. Considering all manner of weather behavior, the only explanation that came out was the tornado was simply an overwhelming build-up of political spin on the eve of the local elections. look for more to take place as the country gets swept up in what will naturally lead to a little bit of a disaster, our elections. In other news, Woolworths are in hot water, this time over their excessively skinny mannequins. Yep. Mannequins, that is. Woolworths say the mannequins resemble what women should look like if they only eat their overpriced kale salads, so people have no right to be upset by any of this. In other news, Pick and Pay, dad bod mannequins are a real hit in clothing stores, with an increase in shapeless golf shirts alone being seen since implementation. And finally, Kagiso Rabada won an incredible six awards last night at South Africa's CSA annual awards. Minister of Social Media, Troll Employment and Recreational Sport, Fikile Mbalula, was not at the awards to congratulate him, however. He was too busy being one of the driving forces behind the Tembisa tornado that we mentioned just earlier. Have a great day. We will see you tomorrow, 6 o'clock. CliffCentral.com.